characters, if you'll allow me, salvation, the city, sycamore tree, and money as characters. We'll have a little bit of a look at those later. But also I love it because it's one of those stories where one of the most important things about the story doesn't happen in the story. And I think there's something we can learn from that this evening, that sometimes the most important things have happened a long time before. And we'll have a look at that, as I say. But I guess we've all got sort of mental images in our mind from the story of Zacchaeus. And I've just got some pictures that are going to be up on the screen. First is a picture of Jericho at night during one of the frequent power cuts that blights the region. Okay. So that's modern-day Jericho from a height. Very few photos of Jericho in Jesus' day survive, so you're going to have to make do with that. And then just in case you're wondering, what's a sycamore tree? Well, a sycamore tree looks like that. There would have been a city around it, of course, in the story, but you just have to imagine that in. And I guess we've all got a mental picture of Jesus, right? Because he's Californian. It's not like he was Jewish or anything. And then I guess you've all got a mental picture of Zacchaeus. Yeah. You know, we know he's the little guy. Okay, he's the little guy. And everybody, you know, anybody who went to Sunday school, thanks, that's enough of Danny. That's his middle name, Zacchaeus Danny. And but we've got those sort of mental images, haven't we, in our minds, so many of us, and particularly about Zacchaeus. I would imagine that nearly every little group contained the fact that Zacchaeus was small. Am I right? He's a little guy, yeah? Maybe he isn't, but we'll see that in a little while. Okay, so let's start with Jericho, just for those of you who like to get a bit of context. Jericho is quite a significant city in Scripture. It was the first point of conquest for Joshua as Joshua led the people of Israel out of the wandering in the wilderness into the promised land. It was where Rahab the prostitute gave Joshua and Caleb somewhere to hide when they were being pursued, and Jericho fell. Archaeologists reckon that Jericho is the most rebuilt city on earth, the most commonly rebuilt city on earth. And archaeologists trace its origins, the first trace of humankind there, about 9,000 years ago. And archaeological work continues. It's famous in the New Testament as well. It was a particularly good place to spend the winter because its climate was warmer than a lot of the surrounding areas. So Herod the Great, Herod's the guy who was Herod, who, well, obviously he was Herod right the way through his life. He was king when Jesus was born. He's known as Herod the Great, and he built a winter palace in Jericho. In fact, he actually died there. So when you're reading your Christmas stories and you read that an angel appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, Herod, who was trying to kill the boy, has died, actually his death occurred in Jericho. And Jesus uses Jericho quite a bit. So this story, Zacchaeus, it's also the place for the healing of blind Bartimaeus in Mark 10. And Jesus uses it as one of the two cities between which the travelers are going when the Good Samaritan helps the guy who was robbed. Yeah? So Jericho crops up quite a bit. And do you notice how many times significant stuff happens as Jesus is passing through? You know, we looked last week at the walking on the water. Disciples are out in the boat, and Jesus made as though he's going to go straight past them. Luke 24, the road to Emmaus with the two disciples. Jesus said, I'm going to go on. And here, Jesus is just passing through Jericho, and then something happens. So Jericho itself plays almost like a character in this story. Okay, Zacchaeus, let's get to the guy. How many of you said he's little? It's okay, it's not a trick question. Well, it's about to be, but it wasn't then. No, Zacchaeus, little guy, he probably was. But the Greek is ambiguous. And when we read literally in the Greek, he wanted to see him, but he was short, so he could not see him. The Greek is ambiguous. And I love the possibility that it might actually have been Jesus who was the little guy. And so Zacchaeus couldn't see him because of the crowd. Now, okay, Zacchaeus probably was a little guy, but the Greek is ambiguous. The reason I like it is because, we have that Hollywood image, Robert Powell. Anybody remember Robert Powell, if you're a certain generation? Yeah, there's a few weak knees in the front row, even as I speak. Robert Powell was this blue-eyed, blonde-locked Jesus. And they're really getting going here now, so we'll move on. But, you know, we've got that idea that Jesus had to be this sort of, you know, whatever a stunner was, a stunning male. And I love the idea that, you know, Isaiah says there was nothing attractive to draw our gaze upon him. And part of me loves the idea that maybe Jesus was the little guy, not Zacchaeus. Anyway, don't want to get hung up on that. But what else do we know about Zacchaeus? Where's my pen? Okay, just call out a few things from your telling of the story. What do we know about Zacchaeus? Let's say he's short. I'll give you that one. Because it's most likely... Yeah, but anyway. Anything else about Zacchaeus that we know?
Tax collector.
Tax collector. Thank you. What? Nimble. Okay. Yeah. That's the tree business, right? Yeah, that's good. Nimble, excellent. Let's focus on what the text actually says about him. And but that's a great one, I like that. The idea of little Zach, nimble. I mean, we don't know how long it took him to get up the tree, or, you know, anyway, but there we go. So,
wealthy,
thank you, okay. Yep. Anything else? Sorry? He was Jewish. Yeah, so tax collectors were Jewish, so that helps. He was probably a resident of Jericho. There's a couple of other things we learn in the story. Ah, thank you. Excellent. He was despised. And quite a lot of that had to do with being a tax collector. The deal was the Romans occupied Israel at this time, and they had a very efficient system. They wanted to tax people. That's why you invade countries, because you want to get their wealth. And the way the Romans did it, wherever they invaded and wherever they conquered, they employed local people to be their tax collectors. Why? Because the local people would know who the other local people were. You employ somebody who actually has grown up and lived in Jericho. They know everything. And so they're great people to collect taxes. And the deal was that the Romans did, they said to the tax collectors, here's the amount you've got to give us. We do not mind how much extra you collect for yourself. That's the wealth. And that's why they're despised. Not only are they collaborating with the occupying enemy, in other words, they're doing the enemy's work for them, but actually they are lining their own pockets as well. So tax collectors were particularly looked down upon. And it's significant that Jesus spends quite a lot of his time with them. Matthew, one of his disciples, was a tax collector. And so those things that we know about Zacchaeus. We're not told what his motive was for coming to Jesus. But we can say that Jesus was an event. You know, there are certain individuals who are events, aren't they? They're mainly celebrities today, sadly, maybe some politicians. But some people are events. In other words, you bring some people into a place and other people will just come. That's the way it is. Used to work with vicars. But, Jesus was an event and people gathered and people came. We're not given the reason for Zacchaeus's wanting to see Jesus. But we do know, almost for certain, that money had a hold on him. He did what he did because he loved money. And that's why you became a tax collector. You had to love money. Because as soon as you accepted the job of tax collector, you're going to be the most unpopular guy around. And the only way you can do that is if you love money. And money has a hold on him. And I just think it's worth asking the question, you know, when it comes to you and me, what has a hold on us? May not be money. Maybe. Maybe something else. But part of salvation is having the hold broken. Because actually money was killing Zacchaeus. Even as it surrounded him in luxury. Back in the days before technology, there were tribes in the East who used to catch monkeys, and they found that one of the most effective ways of catching a monkey was to put a clay jar with something sweet inside it that the monkey could smell, and the opening of the jar was such that the monkey could get his hand in with its finger stretched out, but once his fist closed over the sweet thing, it could no longer get its arm out. And what they found was the monkeys would just stay there. Because they couldn't let go of the thing they wanted. And that's part of what it is to be a fallen human being, is to have something that you maybe think you've got a hold on, but actually it's got a hold on you. And part of salvation is breaking that hold. That's what Jesus comes. When Jesus says, salvation has come to this house today, part of what he's talking about is the hold has been broken. And there's a demonstration of that immediately, of course, when Zacchaeus says, look, I'm going to give my money to the poor. I'm going to give half away. And if I've robbed anything of anybody, I'll pay back four times. You may want to think as I carry on, what has its hold on you? Okay, another character in this story are the crowds. And the crowds behave just like crowds do. They say things that individuals might not say, but crowds just behave in a different way. And if you notice, the crowds is what gives the clue that Zacchaeus is despised, because they talk about him, they mutter. That's a crowd speciality. Have you ever discovered that? People probably mutter more in crowds than they do alone. Is that true? I don't know. What do you think? I think they probably do. Crowd muttering is a human speciality. And so is bad-mouthing other people, particularly when you're in a crowd. It's part, again, of being fallen human beings, that all too often when we gather together, we bad-mouth other people. And actually, an awful lot of human misery goes back to the fact that human beings tend to take their own identity, their own meaning, their own worth by distinguishing themselves over against others. And we might do that on the obvious things like race or gender or sexuality or whatever it may be, but something in us loves to define ourselves as in because other people are out. And human crowds are vicious verbally and sometimes beyond verbally at the person who doesn't fit in. And do you ever notice in the Bible that Jesus is drawn to those who don't fit in? Jesus just is so tender for a guy like Zacchaeus because that's the reason we're doing this series. Jesus sees with different eyes. Jesus doesn't see a man to be despised. He sees a son of Abraham to be saved. So again, the question to us as we go, it's quite possible that we will, in our workplaces, in the places we live, in our groups, there might be a Zacchaeus in our midst, the person who's always the butt of the jokes, the person who's always slightly left out, the person actually we don't find easy. So the choice is going to be how we're going to look at Zacchaeus next time we see him or her. Are we going to look with those human eyes that despise, or are we going to see, ask Jesus to give us his eyes to see? And the crowds are so fickle, this isn't in the text, but I guess as soon as Zacchaeus said, look, if I've robbed anybody, you can have back four times. I bet there's a queue outside Zacchaeus' house. Zacchaeus, remember me? I was a really good mate to you, wasn't I? Do you remember? Crowds are a bit fickle. And then the disciples. The disciples. Oh, I just want to say one thing about crowds. Crowds are led. And I think, you know, we can ask the question, am I a follower when I'm in my crowd? Do I just go along with the prevailing behavior, whether it fits in with my Christian values or not? Am I led by the crowd? Or do I actually lead the crowd? Am I able to stand up and say, actually, you know, let's not talk about so-and-so like that. Why don't we be the ones who invite him or her in? Are we a leader? Are we a follower? The disciples. Isn't that rather ironic that they're the reason Zacchaeus can't see Jesus? I think there's an awful lot in that reality for us as a church. The job of disciples is to introduce people to Jesus. The job of disciples is to show Jesus to people. And yet in the story, it's the disciples crowding around that stops Zacchaeus seeing. Jackie and I, my wife and I, were in Ireland recently and with quite a lot of the family, which was lovely. And we found a new beach. Irish beaches are great on the Wild West Coast because there's nobody on them. Fantastic. And we found this beach, Strand Hill. It is actually one of the popular beaches. And we set off walking, and so that you've got the sea on one side, makes it a beach, and then you've got dunes on the other, which also helps to set the scene. And you walk along, and we'd walked, I don't know, about half a mile, maybe, to the first corner. And then the beach disappeared. We got to that bit, and you just look around, and there's another stretch, maybe another mile. And then there's all you can see is maybe another corner. And so just thinking, well, you know, how much time is this going to take? So there was a woman walking a dog. Now, normally in my travels, that's a good sign of a local if somebody's walking a dog. So I said to this woman, this is an absolutely true story. It only happens in Ireland. This is exactly what happened. I said to her, excuse me, we're new here. Could you tell us how far does this beach go? And this woman said, oh, right to the end. And I was so shocked she'd walked on before I thought, you know, that's absolutely useless. But here's the thing, you see, what she said made perfect sense in her own world, but gave no revelation whatsoever in mine. Yeah? Say that again. What she said made perfect sense in her own world, but offered no revelation in mine. And I just wonder, as followers of Jesus, how often we might, when we're talking to others about our faith, say things which make perfect sense in our own Christian world, but offer no revelation in theirs. Does that make sense? And I know it's a hard thing to do, but sometimes it's quite good to do a little audit on how we speak to our non-believing friends. And actually ask the question honestly and invite the Spirit to help us. How helpful are we? Oh, right to the end. Perfect sense in her world. No earthly good in mine. The sycamore tree. Every church should have one. So I don't know whether you're a member of Christchurch here this evening. Some of you I don't recognize necessarily, but if you're visiting us from other churches, that's brilliant. Every church should have a sycamore tree. What do I mean by that? I mean, does church have a place where somebody can sneak in and have a good look at Jesus without being bothered too much? Does that make sense? Understand what I'm saying? People need, some people just want to see Jesus. They want to have a look. And do our churches have sycamore trees? Do our churches make it easy for those who want to see Jesus to do so? Every church should have a sycamore tree. And Jesus, the main event, the main man. I said at the beginning that one of the most important things in this story doesn't happen in the story. How did he know which sycamore tree? And how did he know the guy's called Zacchaeus? And the story doesn't tell us. But what the Gospels tell us is that it was the habit of Jesus, normally first thing in the morning, it's the best time for most of us at the start of the day, Jesus spent time with his Father. Jesus spent time not just talking to his Father, but listening to his Father. And I reckon, there's no evidence for it in the text, but from the character of Jesus, from his habits, I reckon that's when this happened. I reckon that in his time with his Father that morning, his Father said, "Son, Jericho, watch for the third sycamore tree on the left past Temple Street." I'm ad-libbing somewhat here, okay? But, you know, something like that. And because whoever looks up, I mean, did you ever get, is there a book in, there was one in Bath, it was great, it's called Look Up in Bath. It's a city nearby, for those who don't understand my pronunciation. I don't know whether there's one in Bristol, but you know, we go like that, don't we? If you look up, buildings are amazing higher up, if you ever spend the time looking up. But how many of us do? So why did Jesus stop and why did he look up? It's because God told him by the Spirit, word of knowledge, that it would be called in the gifts of the list of the gifts of the Spirit. Now here's the thing for me. Evangelism was easy for Jesus because he knew who to go for. I have spent so much of my life trying to push unwilling people up sycamore trees to have a look at Jesus when they had no intention of doing so whatsoever. Is that anybody else's experience? The energy exerted in trying to shove people up. You want to see Jesus, don't you? Shove, 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 shove. I'm not saying that evangelism is a waste of time. I'm just saying there's an easier way to do it. And I think Jesus gives us the clue here. Because I believe that the Father is the same. I believe the Spirit of Jesus is the same. And I believe the Father longs by his Spirit to tell us things that are going to happen during the day. If we'll spend time listening, Father, would you just give me a name today? Would you give me the person who's going to be ready for me to share with them? To say something that not only makes sense in my Christian world, but which offers revelation in theirs. So I believe that in his prayer life, Jesus received the name Zacchaeus. And I love the scope of salvation. I love what Jesus does and what he says. Because all of these things are true of Zacchaeus, and they are things that he would have acknowledged himself or would have been said over him. But actually, Jesus speaks another word. I'm going to put it in its shortest form. When Jesus says, "Salvation has come to this house," he's saying Zacchaeus is safe. He says, "For he too is a son of Abraham." And it strikes me that, and it's interesting, it happened twice today because I was preaching on another incident in the life of Jesus this morning. And in both cases, there's something significant about Jesus having the last word about somebody. Because actually, we are all prone to words spoken about us. Some of them come from ourselves. Some come from other sources. And for me, there's a real significance, the fact that only Jesus has the right to the final word about you. Cancer cannot speak the final word. A terrorist's bomb or bullet or knife or van cannot speak the final word. Poor exam results cannot speak the final word. When I was 18, I was turned away by Jesus. College, Cambridge. And as a vicar, I find that quite amusing, to be rejected by Jesus at 18. But it wasn't the final word. I went somewhere else, and that was fine. Other people do not have the right to speak the final word. And I know it is just a pastoral human reality that there will be people sitting here who are living the way that they live because they have accepted somebody else's word as the final word. You may not even be aware of it. Or some life circumstance. It could be anything. Only Jesus has the right to the final word. The final word of the crowd over Zacchaeus was rejection, hatred, despising. Jesus tells him he's safe, that he's a son. Because that's the business Jesus is in. He says, "I've come to seek and to save the lost." And Jesus will speak the final word. And here's the thing, not even you can speak the final word about you. Some of the hardest words under which we live are the words we ourselves speak, are they not? And Jesus, I think, wants to speak a stronger word over that to some of us here this evening. That's about it. Thank you for listening. Let's be still and invite God's Spirit to do what he knows we need. We might just want to invite the Spirit of God to talk to us about the way we are in crowds. Maybe the Spirit of God has issued a call to somebody here to be a leader rather than a follower. Maybe some of us are being challenged to just consider again whether we help people see Jesus or whether we block people's view of Jesus, maybe because the way we live doesn't match the words we say. Maybe salvation needs to come to our house in a fuller way today. There may be those here who have come, as it were, sitting in a sycamore tree tonight to look at Jesus. I invite you to hear him speak your name, to invite himself for tea with you. But it may be that fuller sense of salvation, of words spoken, bowing to the final word spoken by Jesus as he says to you by his Spirit tonight that you are safe, that you are loved, that you have value, that you are significant. Just in the stillness, allow the Spirit of God to speak words to you, words of life, words of hope, words of truth.